Reading 2. Well, I went there to teach school, and I went to board with a Mrs. Amelia Dennison and her sister, Mrs. Bird. Abby, her name was. Abby Bird. She was a widow. She had never had any children. She had a little money. Mrs. Dennison didn't have any. And she had come to East Wilmington and bought the house they lived in. It was a real pretty house, though it was very old and run down. It had cost Mrs. Bird a good deal to put it in order. I guess that was the reason they took me to board. I guess they thought it would help along a little. I guess what I paid for my board about kept us all in victual. Mrs. Bird had enough to live on if they were careful, but she had spent so much fixing up the old house that they must have been a little pinched for a while. Anyhow, they took me to board, and I thought I was pretty lucky to get in there. I had a nice room, big and sunny and furnished pretty, the paper and paint all new, and everything as neat as wax. Mrs. Dennison was one of the best cooks I ever saw, and I had a little stove in my room, and there was always a nice fire there when I got home from school. I thought I hadn't been in such a nice place since I lost my own home, until I had been there about 3 weeks. I had been there about 3 weeks before I found it out, though I guess it had been going on ever since they had been in the house, and that was most 4 months. They hadn't said anything about it, and I didn't wonder, for there they had just bought the house and been to so much expense and trouble fixing it up. Well, I went there in September. I began my school the first Monday. I remember it was a real cold fall. There was a frost the middle of September, and I had to put on my winter coat. I remember when I came home that night. Let me see. I began school on a Monday, and that was 2 weeks from the next Thursday. I took off my coat downstairs and laid it on the table in the front entry. It was a real nice coat, heavy black broadcloth trimmed with fur. I had had it in the winter before. Mrs. Bird called after me as I went upstairs that I ought not to leave it in the front entry for fear somebody might come in and take it. But I only laughed and called back to her that I wasn't afraid. I never was much afraid of burglars. Well, though it was hardly the middle of September, it was a real cold night. I remember my room faced west, and the sun was getting low, and the sky was a pale yellow and purple, just as you see it sometimes in the winter when there is going to be a cold snap. I rather think that was the night the frost came the first time. I know Mrs. Dennison covered up some flowers she had in the front yard anyhow. I remember looking out and seeing an old green plaid shawl of hers over the verbena bed. There was a fire in my little wood stove. Mrs. Bird made it. I know she was a real motherly sort of woman. She always seemed to be the happiest when she was doing something to make other folks happy and comfortable. Mrs. Dennison told me she had always been so. She said she had coddled her husband within an inch of his life. It's lucky Abby never had any children, she said, for she would have spoiled them. Well, that night I sat down beside my nice little fire and ate an apple. There was a plate of nice apples on my table. Mrs. Bird put them there. I was always very fond of apples. Well, I sat down and ate an apple and was having a beautiful time and thinking how lucky I was to have got board in such a place with such nice folks, when I heard a queer little sound at my door. It was such a little, hesitating sort of sound that it sounded more like a fumble than a knock, as if someone very timid, with very little hands, was feeling along the door, not quite daring to knock. For a minute, I thought it was a mouse. But I waited, and it came again. And then I made up my mind it was a knock, but a very little scared one. So I said, "Come in." But nobody came in. And then presently, I heard the knock again. Then I got up and opened the door, thinking it was very queer. And I had a frightened feeling, without knowing why. Well, I opened the door, and the first thing I noticed was a draught of cold air, as if the front door downstairs was open. But there was a strange, close smell about the cold draught. It smelled more like a cellar that had been shut up for years than out of doors. Then I saw something. I saw my coat first. The thing that held it was so small that I couldn't see much of anything else. Then I saw a little white face, with eyes so scared and wishful that they seemed as if they might eat a hole in anybody's heart. It was a dreadful little face, with something about it which made it different from any other face on earth. But it was so pitiful that somehow it did away a good deal with the dreadfulness. And there were two little hands, spotted purple with the cold, holding up my winter coat. And a strange little faraway voice said, "I can't find my mother." "For heaven's sake," I said, "who are you?" Then the little voice said again, "I can't find my mother." All the time, I could smell the cold, and I saw that it was about the child. That cold was clinging to her, as if she had come out of some deadly cold place. Well, I took my coat. I did not know what else to do. And the cold was clinging to that. It was as cold as if it had come off ice. When I had the coat, I could see the child more plainly. She was dressed in one little white garment, made very simply. It was a nightgown, only very long, quite covering her feet, and I could see dimly through it her little thin body, mottled purple with the cold. Her face did not look so cold. That was a clear waxen white. Her hair was dark, but it looked as if it might be dark only because it was so damp, almost wet, and might really be light hair. It clung very close to her forehead, which was round and white. She would have been very beautiful if she had not been so dreadful. "Who are you?" says I again, looking at her. She looked at me with her terrible pleading eyes and did not say anything. "What are you?" says I. Then she went away. She did not seem to run or walk like other children. She flitted, like one of those little filmy white butterflies that don't seem like real ones, they are so light, and move as if they had no weight. But she looked back from the head of the stairs. "I can't find my mother," said she. And I never heard such a voice. "Who is your mother?" says I. But she was gone. Well, I thought for a moment I should faint away. The room got dark, and I heard a singing in my ears. Then I flung my coat onto the bed. My hands were as cold as ice from holding it, and I stood in my door and called first Mrs. Bird and then Mrs. Dennison. I didn't dare go down over the stairs where that had gone. It seemed to me I should go mad if I didn't see somebody or something like other folks on the face of the earth. I thought I should never make anybody hear, but I could hear them stepping about downstairs, and I could smell biscuits baking for supper. Somehow, the smell of those biscuits seemed the only natural thing left to keep me in my right mind. I didn't dare go over those stairs. I just stood there and called, and finally I heard the entry door open and Mrs. Bird called back. "What is it? Did you call Miss Arms?" "Come up here. Come up here as quick as you can, both of you, I screamed out. Quick, quick, quick. I heard Mrs. Bird tell Mrs. Dennison, Come quick, Amelia, something is the matter in Miss Ames's room. It struck me even then that she expressed herself rather queerly, and it struck me as very queer indeed when they both got upstairs and I saw that they knew what had happened, or that they knew of what nature the happening was. "What is it, dear?" asked Mrs. Bird, and her pretty, loving voice had a strained sound. I saw her look at Mrs. Dennison, and I saw Mrs. Dennison look back at her. "It was a child I have never seen here before. It looked like a child," says I, "but I never saw a child so dreadful, and it had on a nightgown, and said she couldn't find her mother. Who was it?" I thought for a minute Mrs. Dennison was going to faint, but Mrs. Bird hung on to her and rubbed her hands and whispered in her ear. She had the cooingest kind of voice, and I ran and got her a glass of cold water. I tell you, it took considerable courage to go downstairs alone, but they had set a lamp on the entry table so I could see. I don't believe I could have spunked up enough to have gone downstairs in the dark, thinking every second that child might be close to me. The lamp and the smell of the biscuits baking seemed to sort of keep my courage up. But I tell you, I didn't waste much time going down those stairs and out into the kitchen for a glass of water. I pumped as if the house was afire, and I grabbed the first thing I came across in the shape of a tumbler. It was a painted one that Mrs. Dennison's Sunday school class gave her, and it was meant for a flower vase. Well, I filled it and then ran upstairs. I felt every minute as if something would catch my feet, and I held the glass to Mrs. Dennison's lips, while Mrs. Bird held her head up, and she took a good long swallow. Then she looked hard at the tumbler. "Yes," says I know I got this one, but I took the first I came across, and it isn't hurt a mite." "Don't get the painted flowers wet," says Mrs. Dennison very feebly. "They'll wash off it if you do." "I'll be real careful," says I. I knew she set a sight by that painted tumbler. The water seemed to do Mrs. Dennison good, for presently she pushed Mrs. Bird away and sat up. She had been laying down on my bed. "I'm all over it now," says she. But she was terribly white, and her eyes looked as if they saw something outside things. Mrs. Bird wasn't much better, but she always had a sort of settled, sweet, good look that nothing could disturb to any great extent. I knew I looked dreadful, for I caught a glimpse of myself in the glass, and I would hardly have known who it was. Mrs. Dennison, she slid off the bed and walked sort of tottery to a chair. "I was silly to give way so," says she. "No, you wasn't silly, sister," says Mrs. Bird. "I don't know what this means any more than you do, but whatever it is, no one ought to be called silly for being overcome by anything so different from other things which we have known all our lives." Mrs. Dennison looked at her sister. Then she looked at me. Then back at her sister again. And Mrs. Bird spoke as if she had been asked a question. "Yes," says she, "I do think Miss Arms ought to be told. That is, I think she ought to be told all we know ourselves." "That isn't much," said Mrs. Dennison with a dying away sort of sigh. She looked as if she might faint away again any minute. She was a real delicate-looking woman, but it turned out she was a good deal stronger than poor Mrs. Bird.